Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. If those of you who don't have a seat and would like to have a seat would take a seat, we can get going here. My name's Bruce Gibson. I'm the county supervisor for District 2, and I'm very pleased to welcome you. I know that it's going to be an active period of public discussion, leading over the course of the next 6 to 9 months into some very significant decisions that are going to be made on this long-standing project. We'll introduce a number of folks to you this evening. I would just like to thank you for spending your time coming out here. It's hard to overstate how pleasing it is to see a room full of people who are willing to come out on a Wednesday night to talk about sewage processing and other important environmental issues. But this is a unique community, and we have a unique project before us. Before we get too far down into the details here, I would like to just introduce a couple of people. I'm very gratified to have my colleague, Supervisor Kacho Ashajian from the 4th District with us this evening, as well as Supervisor-elect Adam Hill from the 3rd District. I know we also have various directors of the Los Osos CSD, members of the Technical Advisory Committee that's been working so hard, members of the Los Osos Community Advisory Council, many stalwarts in the discussion that we've been having over the past many, many years. I will keep my remarks short. I've, in fact, never been criticized for being too brief. But I would like to just talk a little bit about the structure of this evening. I'm going to turn it over here in a minute to Mr. Pavel Ogren, who's our Director of Public Works and a name and face that I'm sure is familiar to many of you. He will introduce his team to walk you through the EIR. We have a variety of folks here from Michael Brandman and Associates, who are the consultants who've done that. I think that presentation is going to take something along the lines of an hour or so. This is a huge document. I'll wave it around if someone can lift a copy of it. This is the executive summary, basically. And there's actually OSHA rules preventing us from lifting the whole document in one load. Work safety for bureaucrats, but that's important as well. At that point, we will take. Well, I guess before I should say that, there's going to be a lot of study. This is a huge document that's going to require a lot of study. I do want to mention that the Los Osos Community Advisory Council is going to be conducting study sessions and working progressively through it. We have Ms. Mimi Whitney, who's going to be facilitating that. Next to her is Carol Maurer, who chairs the advisory council. If you're interested in who is going to be distributing these very important 3x5 cards? We have Mr. Fred Delegata in the back, Mr. John Waddell. I think they're just going to be circulating up and down. If a question occurs, stick a hand in the air. We won't call on you like it was school, but one of these gentlemen will deliver you a card. That said, I think I've exhausted the things that I want to talk to you about. I'll turn it over to Pavel.
Thanks, Bruce. Thanks, Bruce, for those introductory remarks. Certainly saves me the need to get into some of that. Really, in addition to our notable attendees, I really want to make sure to thank everybody for coming. The turnout tonight is great. Our first town hall meeting was about 2 years ago after Assembly Bill 2701 was approved by the state legislature. That was Assemblyman Blakesley's bill. And I'm not sure that the crowd was even quite this large at that time. I know we had a really good crowd at that time, but certainly, again, want to appreciate everybody coming out. And I was walking in with one of the Richard Margetson, and I said, I think the fun's just now going to start. Really, the last 2 years, you know, when the county got the project back, we've been spending a lot of time on analysis. There was clearly a need for us to do the engineering analysis in 2007, and then this environmental analysis in 2008. And for a long time, we've been asked a lot of questions, and we really had to wait till tonight to get the draft EIR done before we could really start getting into the dialogue with the community. As Mark is going to mention, the public comments on the draft EIR is January 30th. So even in the next couple of months, we're going to work especially hard at listening to comments, listening to responses and stuff. And again, our responses to public comments will then be after January 30th. But we really are glad that we're finally at this point to get into this dialogue that's lead to decision-making. So tonight, real quickly, before turning it over to the environmental team, I'm just going to cover what the meeting topics are, a little bit of the project status, obviously the environmental impact report, next steps associated with that, and as Supervisor Gibson mentioned, we'll have some questions and answers at the very end, utilizing question cards. Obviously, a size of crowd like this and time limitations, we're not going to be able to get to everybody's questions. By submitting them on cards, then we'll work with Mr. Gibson to sort through, and a lot of the questions will be repetitive. So hopefully, if we don't address your question specifically, we're addressing another one. Truly holding their enforcement actions in abeyance at this point in time, and clearly that was one of the major policies that the board adopted in June 2006, is looking for the regional board to hold enforcement actions in abeyance to give us the opportunity to work with the community and move forward. Those policies also identified, the ones that the board felt were important for Assemblyman Blakeslee to incorporate into AB 2701, which was approved in September of 2006, as well as many of the project strategies that we've been operating under since then. The rough screening and fine screening reports, as I mentioned, were the engineering analysis that was done in 2007. Essentially, it's called the basis of evidence for the Prop 218 report. The Prop 218 vote that, the community approved on an 80% favorable vote in last year, and we had to do the fine screening and the rough screening reports, the engineering analysis, to have a basis of evidence for the cost estimates. And obviously, the community stepping up last year on the Prop 218 vote was extremely important for us to be able to move forward. And then in 2007, also, the TAC, did the pro-con analysis. The participation of the TAC members has been extremely important. We've had a little bit of turnover, but most of the individuals who started with us are still members of the TAC. And it's also important to note that their role really does end next month. It was a two-year term. The Technical Advisory Committee was specifically there to do a pro-con analysis of some of the alternatives and to really facilitate public participation during the last 2 years. And the individuals have done a wonderful job, and certainly we'll be getting something to the Board of Supervisors to give them special thanks. But one of the things that we made sure to do on the Technical Advisory Committee in this case, as opposed to many others, is we didn't want them to actually be put in that difficult situation of having to make recommendations on solutions. Instead, we wanted them to help us with public participation, with pro-con analysis. And so now that we're moving into sort of the final decision-making phase, their job is done. And as I'll mention, we've got some other things upcoming in order to help with community responses and community preferences. In 2008, then, the EIR scoping, the draft EIR is all about tonight. And then the items that are not checked off are some of the upcoming major efforts that we have, including the design-build process. Thankfully, in recent legislation allows us to have real flexibility on pursuing design-build, and because there are some alternatives that still need to be on the table for consideration, he got to see our beautiful Central Coast from the ocean view. And again, that was part of the Cal Poly conferences, or sponsored through there. Coastal development permit is clearly going to be a significant issue as we move forward. One of the things, as we've been meeting with the various resource agencies, that I've been using sort of as a little mantra, I guess, if lack of a better word, is that a lot of the focus in the community is on the regional board, and obviously the regional board has that unfortunate, position of being the enforcer here on certain regulations. But the reality is that they have one objective, clean water, and there's multiple solutions in order to satisfy their objectives. The contrast with the Coastal Commission and the Coastal Resources Act and coastal resources overall is that the Coastal Commission has multiple coastal responsibilities. And finding that one project that's going to satisfy multiple coastal responsibilities is arguably going to be the bigger challenge than satisfying the regional board. So we're very much also keeping, keen to some of those dynamics of developing a project in the future. Project status report to the community of Los Osos. Today is really going to be the focus on the draft EIR, and it's going to be the introduction. And with the volume of the document that Supervisor Gibson had alluded to. Certainly tonight is not to answer all the questions associated with the contents of that document. I know that some individuals have already had the opportunity to break its cover, but there's still a lot of reading to be done. But the introduction is going to be important so that the environmental team can walk through the approach to the EIR and some of the significant issues associated with it. But the draft EIR itself, it's a document that's a statutory type of a required document. So it's not going to provide answers, and it's certainly not even going to indicate what the project team's recommendations might be on the project. And I really want to sort of caution everybody to not read into it too much. It's an informational document. It's a scientific-based document. The comments on it are going to be very important, but it really doesn't describe what the project team thinks in terms of how to make the final decision-making. Instead, what we are doing, as many people know, we've been doing a monthly update to the Board of Supervisors on the project status, and in December, everybody should be getting something in the mail that's going to be a report from the project team to the community, and it is the project status report to the community of Los Osos. And that's the document, that's the report that's going to provide insight as to what kind of recommendations do we think are appropriate to move forward, and what issues need to be further left with our consultant on it, and have had a number of people provide feedback on that draft. But in addition to having the draft EIR available when the community is filling out the community survey, we also want to make sure that they understand, you know, sort of our perceptions on the project and decision making. And in the final slide that I'm going to cover before I turn it off over to the EIR team, this sort of just illustrates then the some of the dynamics that we're working with right now. Critical tools, if you will, for making final decision making. One, again, is we're going to provide the project status report to the community to provide insight into our thinking. The draft EIR, of course, is an extremely important document in evaluating environmental impacts. The design build RFQ, that's request for qualification. So that's the first step in getting private industry involved in the project. And then the community's preferences as we expect to get from the community survey. Those are the four critical tools that we're moving forward with. The comments due, the statement of qualifications from the private contractors, and the survey results are all going to be coming into us end of January, February timetable. And so then we're going to have that additional input and sources of information in order to go to the Board of Supervisors and start indicating what we think recommendations are in shaping the project. And what I've shown up here on the screen is that we have two red boxes on final EIR and the coastal development permit. And the reason why is there's going to be a fork in the road around March and the April timetable. And because it's after we get the comments on the draft EIR and after we get the statement of qualifications from private industry contractors and after we get the community survey results, is that one of two things is going to happen. Either what should be constructed is going to be well enough defined through these tools that we will bring forward to the Board of Supervisors a recommendation to move forward. And if that's the case, then the final EIR and the coastal development permit will go first, and then completing the design build process will go second. If in March, April, the project direction on exact technologies is still not quite nailed down, that is, we want to make sure that the design build process finishes up before we finalize the EIR and the coastal development permit, then that's the other portion of the fork in the road. So we might be in a final EIR coastal development permit process as early as about April, or we might be looking at that back in August or September. Again, the fork in the road will be around March and April's timetable. So we feel like things are really coming together. So I didn't actually find out what the environmental superior alternative was until Monday myself. And so I'm looking forward to their presentation and myself pouring through the draft EIR. So in conclusion, who are these wonderful individuals who are with us tonight? Mark Hutchinson is the Public Works Department's Environmental Division Manager. Our Public Works Department had the Board of Supervisors created the Environmental Division in about 2001, and it has been so absolutely critical. Last week, we were down at a Coastal Commission appeal for the San Simeon Bridge projects, and working closely with Coastal Commission staff, they actually made a recommendation that was 100% favorable to us, where they proposed no substantial issues is the technical term. But essentially, Coastal staff said, hey, Commission, even though this item's been appealed to you, we don't recommend any changes to what the county had developed in those particular bridge projects. Well, then we got a little bit of line of questioning, and I was glad Mark was there because we had sort of figured out in advance who would answer which questions and stuff. And thankfully for me, their questions were all for Mark to answer. But the feedback that I got from one of the commissioners, apparently the individual who city council person for Palos Verdes, is that indicated Mr. Hutchinson was the best public works speaker that he had ever heard of, that he had ever heard in his tenure on the Coastal Commission. And Mark is a public works employee, but he is an environmental specialist, extremely accomplished in his profession. And I'm obviously very glad that he's on the team, and I'm glad that the Board of Supervisors approved the Environmental Division for Public Works back in 2001. It's been extremely good on permitting issues, environmental review, and I think it's a critical feature of being able to work on this Los Osos wastewater project. And then to my left, the two that I'm going to introduce, and I'll let them introduce their associates, is Michael Brandman. Michael Brandman Associates is the firm that is the lead on the EIR. There's a number of sub-consultants. And then Gene Talmadge has been the project manager, the guy who's on the phone all the time and you know, asking the questions and then finding out answers and really the corner, you know, the heart behind the development of the draft EIR. I'm going to turn it over to Mark now, but I also want to mention that, you know, overall, there's about 75 professionals, you know, many, many firms and about 75 different professionals who are actually working on the EIR team and the project. And, you know, the areas of expertise that they cover are really
nice people, but that was the big city, the big time. I don't really want to do that on a regular basis. So I'm glad to be in Los Osos tonight with you all. I'm sure they're nice folks. Cacho's on that commission, but we'll try to only do that once in a while. As Pavel said, my title is Environmental Programs Manager. It does fit on a business card, but just barely. I work for the Public Works Department, and I'm responsible to make sure that all of the activities of Public Works follow the various environmental laws, regulations, and processes that apply to everything that we do. In this project, my key role has been to go out and find Michael Brandman Associates to answer all of the hard questions. What Michael and I and Gene are going to do for you tonight is give you a little bit about background, primarily about CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act, my favorite topic. I love to talk to people about it. We'll talk about, they'll show you what the project alternatives are and how that's sorted out, how we approach this EIR. We'll touch on the areas of impacts, but as you can imagine, we only have an hour tonight, and that's pretty deep, but we want to give you a taste and flavor of what the EIR is all about. I'll talk a little bit at the end about commenting on an EIR, and then we'll give you a picture of what the next step in the EIR process are. I always want to put this slide up to remind us what the basic purposes of CEQA are, CEQA, California Environmental Quality Act. It's been the law in California since 1970. It's very similar to a federal law called the National Environmental Policy Act, which dates from 1969. This is directly out of the CEQA guidelines that the state puts out. The key purposes of doing an EIR, which is part of the CEQA process, is to provide information about environmental impacts. It's not that there aren't other impacts, economic, social, community-wide impacts and whatnot. This is focused primarily on environmental impacts. We want to identify and prevent environmental damage. A little more than just provide information, the California law requires us to do what we can to avoid that environmental impacts and reduce them where possible. That's what mitigation and alternatives are about. Mitigation is about offsetting impacts, and alternatives is about doing something different that has hopefully less impacts. The process is structured to encourage public participation. So we call this document a draft EIR. The long title is Public Review Draft EIR. So we're not showing you a half-done document. We presented a document out, but it doesn't become a final EIR until your written comments and our written responses are incorporated into it. So the public comments are important. And this is a basic flowchart of the environmental impact process. It kind of zigs around the page. It's simplified, but we start with something called an initial study. That's a document that I prepare, a process that I go through. We look at a project to decide, could this possibly have significant effects? As you can imagine, doing a sewer system in a developed community, it didn't take very long to conclude that we just might have some important environmental effects. We do a thing called the notice of preparation, send that to other agencies, ask their opinion, and in Los Osos, we published that, held a couple of community meetings, and asked people to give us their ideas about what should be included in the EIR. That's called the scoping process. What should it cover? And Gene will take us more through what the topics are in the EIR. Then we produce something called the draft EIR, as I mentioned. It's a public review document. It's out there for you to look at, to comment on, to ask questions about. And we move into this big bar in the middle, the public review period. Now, CEQA says that we have to have the document out there for a minimum of 45 days, although there's no upper limit. Obviously, for a project like this, and it being the holidays, we're certainly going to go longer than 45 days. Right now, we're asking for your written comments by the end of January, so you don't have to rush out and get the document tomorrow. There's time after Thanksgiving, and I'm certain that in between wrapping gifts and all of that, you might just pick up an EIR, or preferably jump on the website, check out a few things. The heavy document there is something over 400 pages, but I've read it, and it is quite interesting. Maybe I have a jaundiced perspective on that. There are nice pictures, if you're into that, and charts and tables and things. But Gene will explain to us how it's organized. We've done a lot of work to make this something that's usable rather than just dumping it on top of your heads. I asked one of my staff members yesterday to pop the CD in the computer, open the various files, so that document plus the three major appendices and count up the total pages. Any guesses? 3,314. All of them are very exciting, I can assure you. There's great information on every page, but Gene will take you through and show you how to work that. Once we get all of your comments and responses and we make whatever changes are necessary in the document to make it complete and accurate, we produce something called a final EIR. And then CEQA says, believe it or not, you have to put that out in the public for 10 days before you decide what to do. In my 19 years with the county, I have never seen any decision-making body at the county give the public only 10 days. So you can be assured that it will be significantly longer than 10 days that you have the final EIR and can participate in that process. There'll be construction. So we're with it for quite a while. The EIR team, when we first got together, and Pavel mentioned some 75 different professionals. At times we had as many as, I would believe, 20, 25 people together in one room for eight-hour sessions, 2 days long. Pavel doesn't let you leave. He even brings in lunch. An amazing process to watch people who are very, very advanced in their fields work through debate issues, work through issues. But one of the first things we wanted to do was get everybody on the same page. So after getting everyone up to speed on the history of the sewer project, the things that are important to the community, the things that we saw in the project, the team developed these guiding principles and decided that obviously the EIR needed to be legally adequate, but it needed to be an objective and unbiased analysis. We needed to maximize existing information. Depending on how you count them, this is either the fourth or fifth EIR that's been done on a wastewater project in Los Osos. Now, there's a great value to having pre-existing information. You could take advantage of it, but we realized also that we had to review all of it and make sure that what we did use was still accurate for today's world and today's project. We wanted to document all of our work, so unfortunately, 3,314 pages. I didn't include the reference document there on another CD, which I didn't count the pages, but we do have that. And we wanted to create a document that readers could actually use. I mean, it's great for somebody like me who writes EIRs and reads EIRs. And by the way, there are EIRs that even put me to sleep. But we wanted something that the community could use, that decision makers could use, that would be a valuable tool in this process. I believe that we've actually accomplished that. With that, I want to turn the microphone over to Michael Brandman, who's our key environmental consultant. And as Pavel said, he's somewhat associated with that firm that has his name on it, and an EIR that also has his name. So, Michael. This is the forward, the arrow button.
Well, thank you, Mark. And I have to say right off the bat, it's been an extreme pleasure for myself and our team to work with Mark and with Pavo and the county and the entire consultant team that the county has been working with, in some cases for several years in this project. I'd just like to say a few words as it relates to Michael Bramman's associates and our services and our project team and a little bit of the history leading up to where we are today. And a lot of it relates to proposals were circulated. We had proposed on the project based on an RFP in September of last year and the proposal in October and interviews and ultimately selection in the middle of December. And time was of the essence, as you can all imagine, and we actually got started a month or so before we actually, you know, had a contract in place just to start understanding the information pulled together and so on. But one of the most important milestones that happened at the very beginning of our assignment was a partnering meeting that Gene Talmadge facilitated on January 12th. This CEQA process is quite different from most of the routine EIRs that many of you are familiar with and many of that I've been involved in my 35 years in the practice. And it's just a few times in your career, in my case 35 years, maybe a half a dozen or so, that I've had the opportunity to work on a project where you're actually engaged in really looking at environmental baseline, environmental considerations, working with design engineers and a variety of other consultants in looking at alternatives, defining those alternatives, refining the alternatives and so on over many months before you actually dig into the EIR itself. And it's rather unique. Quite often the EIR, a project is designed, whether it's a public project or a private project, and a consultant comes in and says, okay, now we have a project, do your EIR, do your thing, and off you go. So this is a very, very different process. And it's well documented in the draft EIR. In fact, the project description chapter 3 and the alternative chapter 7 make up about 35% of the entire document. That's how important this process is and important to communicate it to the public and the public agencies. So I'm very grateful for being able to participate in that. One of the team members that wasn't able to be here tonight that actually authored those two chapters is Pamela Jean Cosby, who is not only a civil engineer, but she's also an environmental planner, a certified planner. So we put a lot of attention to that. The EIR team is made up of not only Michael Bramman Associates, but a variety of sub-consultants. Our firm prepared the vast majority of the document, including the two chapters I just went over, and Carollo and Cleith, in collaboration to do their work. And we had Far Western Anthropological Resource, who actually worked on the previous EIR certified 2001. They, of course, focused on the collection system in town. A lot of previous work had been done there. And we based our new work on what they were doing and in collaboration with them. And then we had a number of other technical subs work on traffic and noise and so on. And as Pablo said, there's over 75 individuals that worked on this team together. This I consider, a very transparent process. I know that's a term that's thrown out a lot politically these days, but this has been a very transparent process. And now that the draft environmental impact report is on the street, it will even be more so. So I certainly look forward to, and our team looks forward to, communicating with and responding to and working with the county and the community. Finally, I just want to say that this firm is an extension of staff. This is the county's environmental impact report. It's not Michael Bramman Associates' environmental impact report. It is it's a public document. The county is the primary author. They participated with us. They are involved in the review and revision and analysis, and based on a lot of the work that we did. So it is their document, and everybody needs to know that. So I think with that, I'm going to hand it over to Gene. Actually, I better introduce a couple of the other people up here. Dr. Ken Lord is an associate principal at Michael Bramman Associates, and he was the project manager in charge of the biological resources and cultural resources studies, very extensive. In fact, the appendix alone for biological resources is about 1,000 pages. So it's it really becomes almost a master environmental assessment for biology for the entire area. Mike Coulihan is an associate with Michael Brannan Associates. Has been with the firm for over 22 years. And he is the project manager, overall project manager on the CEQA portion. And as I mentioned earlier, Pam Cosby was the project manager on the project description and alternatives. Overall and superior project manager is Gene Talmage. And just real quickly, Gene and I worked together previously when he
I'm not as tall as Michael. Thank you. Good evening, everybody. And Supervisor Gibson, thank you for hosting the meeting tonight. And Paavo, thank you for the invitation. Mark, thanks for all your support. And thank you all for coming out tonight. This is the culmination of an awful lot of work. It by no means is the end. But one thing I had to reflect back as I was listening to some of the history, the very first phone call I had on this project was to Mark. And I had seen the RFP, the request for proposal, for environmental consultants. And the simple question was, you want what by when? And I had heard of Los Osos and the wastewater issues, because the agency I used to work for was a wastewater and water agency. And we all knew of Los Osos. And then when the opportunity came to, well, let's take a good close look at this, I called Mark and I said, all right, I understand what you're looking for, but when do you want this? And believe me, I have never seen an environmental report this comprehensive be done in this short amount of time. It's truly a real feather in the cap of all of the environmental teams, so well done to everybody, and I mean the county as well as the environmental staff. Somewhere along the line, I picked up three questions. I'm not going to answer them, but thank you. I guess if you walk around with a name tag on, someone gives you a question card, so that's fine. Anyway, we had a meeting earlier today to talk about the discussion, and there was a toss-up as to whether Paavo or I would have the longest presentation. And I can tell you right now, I think I lost. I haven't even started, and I've got, of this briefing sheet, well over half the sheet. So let me get going. All right. As we started into the project, there was a reference earlier to us getting together as a group, and this was the county and many, many consultants. And we defined specific project objectives. What is it we were really trying to do with this environmental report? And what you see on the screen is a focus on the important issues, groundwater quality, and this relates directly to the direction and directives from the Regional Water Quality Control Board, which is the second, the Regional Water Quality Control Board discharge requirements. That's the name of these. One of the questions when I was sitting back at the table was, well, did you do a full economic analysis? And I says, no. This report says environmental impact report. We talk about costs, but we're not, this is not a environmental cost justification type of document. And then, of course, regulatory compliance. How are we going to comply with all the regulations that are imposed upon us in operating and maintaining a wastewater system? Now, the next slide shows an interesting thing with a lot of colored blocks, and it's called the EIR architecture. And I guess, simply put, this illustrates how we approached the project in terms of a document that you, the public, can look at. And someone took my little brochure, but you probably saw the little brochures. They were spread around the room. Here's one. This is the executive summary to the executive summary. And these are going to be mailed out to all residents. But this is a real quick overview. On the inside, you'll see information about the purpose and benefits of the project, the four proposed projects that were identified, and that's on one of the charts back there, and then where to get additional information and how to comment on the EIR. And this, in a nutshell, is the project from the environmental standpoint. Now, the next piece is this. This looks pretty thin. This is the executive summary, which is chapter 2 of this, which is the draft environmental impact report. Now, the way this is set up, there's three things, actually four sections you need to look at. One is the executive summary, which gives you a good overview and detailed discussion of what the various alternatives are that were reviewed. The second piece is section 3, which is the project description. Michael talked about that earlier. And those are the nuts and bolts details of, if you were to build this system, what would it be? How many feet of pipe? How much excavation? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of the details are in the project description. The fifth chapter here are extracts from detailed reports that are summaries of the environmental effects of each of the alternatives. Chapter 5, as well as other reference material. Now, you say, what am I going to do with all that paper? Well, you don't have to go to paper. This is available. Right now, you can get the draft EIR on the county website. We're also going to be loading up the document on a separate website with additional reference information. That's being constructed right now. You can look at it. I'll give you the URL in a little while. And it's one of those things you can check every day and see what's been added, because more and more and more will be loaded on over time. So that's kind of an idea of how to approach this. This isn't just one great big book that you say, my gosh, how do I fathom all this? You can take as much or as little as you want at any point in time. Now, as we looked at the different proposed projects, there were common elements to all. We have a wastewater collection and conveyance system that takes the sewage from the house and transports it somewhere for treatment. We have a wastewater treatment process that is located at a number of different sites that are identified in the document. We have solids disposal. We have effluent disposal. And that's once the wastewater is treated, what do you do with it? In this case, we have two things. One are leach fields at the Broderson site and spray fields, which are at the Tonini site. And Tonini is common to all as far as a spray field. So all four alternatives use Tonini. Then we have solids processing and disposal, and for those that aren't in the business, that's the stuff that's left. And you have to package that up and take it away. And then a very important aspect to the project are water conservation measures, because to reduce the input into the plant helps in the long-term picture of how much treatment, how big that plant has to be. So there's going to be water conservation measures that will be encouraged and required in many cases for the homeowners. And it just makes sense to make a more efficient use of our water resources. This next picture shows these were alternatives that had been identified from previous reports. And you'll see many common names on here. If you can read all the names, if you're in the back, you probably can't read them. But I don't think any of these would come as any surprise. These alternatives under the, well, we're one ahead. That's okay. No, that's all right. That's fine. The A sites were the Giacomazzi, part of the cemetery site, Brannan and Tonini. The B level sites were the Midtown site. Some people, it was referred to in older documents as Tri-W. For this document, it's called Midtown. Andre Robbins, which essentially are adjacent to the where the power lines go over Los Osos Valley Road, Turi Road, and the Giacomazzi tertiary treatment. And we wanted a discussion in the EIR of tertiary treatment because it may be something that the community wants to consider later. The requirements of the wastewater discharge is not tertiary treatment, it's secondary treatment. So, but we wanted the discussion in the EIR so that you didn't have to go back and revisit that question again. The The four alternatives or four proposed projects that were fully evaluated on a co-equal basis in the EIR are illustrated on this chart. Now, this lines up very similarly with the chart that was developed by the NWRI, which I think some of you are aware of that report that came out within the last month or so. It's the NWRI is the National Water Research Institute, and it's a special collection of people that come together and do a detailed study and look at something and make recommendations. But what we looked at were treatment sites at a combination of the cemetery Giacomazzi-Brannan, one at just Giacomazzi alone, one at just Giacomazzi-Brannan, and then the final at everything is at Tanini. And then for the collection system, there's one alternative that we looked at, the step system. We thought it was important to look at. The other three are gravity. The treatment system, when it says ponds there, it means facultative ponds. It could also be biolac, but facultative ponds is what that means. Ox ditch or biolac, it's just another process. So those are the two basic treatment systems which are done. And then wet weather storage is a open reservoir that's needed to put treated effluent in times when you can't put it anywhere else. But as you move through, what's important to recognize is these are all interchangeable of how you use something. We had to pick something to do the environmental evaluation. What I'll highlight are just the colors. You see up in the left, upper left corner, there's kind of a grid. Well, that's part of the collection system in town. And this happens to be a step system with collection. The purple, which is purple pipe for the treated effluent, there's a white line that goes out Los Osos Valley Road to the treatment plant, which is on Giacomazzi. And then the kind of stippled, those are the spray fields at Tanini. And then the other disposal, which is the percolation, is at Broderson, which is down here. And the purple line connecting it is the treated effluent line. And that same color combination carries through. The proposed project two, the difference is all the facilities are located on Giacomazzi, but the spray treatment is at Tonini, and the percolation is at Broderson. Alternative three is a combination of Giacomazzi-Brannan. That little purple square that you see up on Brannan, that's the storage component. The rest of it's the same. And then number four is everything is located at Tonini with the treatment facilities, the spray fields, and then the return line coming back to Broderson. So those are the four alternatives that are evaluated in the environmental report. Now the impact analysis areas, and this goes back to that busy little graphic I showed you earlier that had a bunch of little funny colors on it, and there's a diagram of it back there. These are the main sections that you'll find in Chapter 5, and are the expanded environmental analysis, is each of these topical items: land use and planning, groundwater resources, drainage, surface water quality, etc., on through noise, agriculture, and visual resources. And the next slide, kind of a sample of key findings. It's noted in the document that there are a number of short-term impacts, and typically they occur during construction. When you dig a hole in the ground, you have to do things with the dirt, you have other considerations. But when you're all done, and 3 years slides, I'm going to walk you very quickly through some areas where there are some effects. None of these are, there's only one, and that's at the end, and I'll save it for the end, but that are significant unavoidable impacts. In the case, for example, of biological resources, we have rare and endangered species and habitat that occurs in town and out of town. The mitigations typically relate to comply with consultation with the natural resources agencies and permit conditions. And generally, you avoid, preserve, and restore habitats if they're disrupted. And that's very typical of environmental documents. The result is there are no significant impacts after mitigation. Next slide. In cultural resources, which is a little more sensitive in to the degree of what are we talking about here, we're talking about two basic things, historical buildings and evidence of Native Americans. That's what cultural resources talks about. So the mitigation is avoidance where you have known locations of either burials or other things. You avoid them to the greatest degree possible. You monitor construction activities if something is found, and then you provide suitable treatment. It could be relocation. It could be any number of things. But part of our process is active engagement with the Native American representatives to be sure we understand where they're coming from and what can be done. Under air quality, and this is great, the hot button right now is greenhouse gases. And greenhouse gases comes under air quality. And you have construction emissions, which are short term, because any time you have construction equipment of whether it's bulldozers, front end loaders, or whatever, digging holes in the ground, you have emissions. Then you have greenhouse gas emissions long term. Well, the short term impacts of construction, there are things you do to mitigate during construction, but some of those you just can't help. It happens. But long term, they're not going to be there forever. They go away. But the greenhouse gas emissions from whatever it is you build, that's going to stay. And in terms of mitigation, you have a construction management plan, which talks about how many pieces of equipment and what kind of mufflers they have to have, what kind of scrubbers they have on their exhausts. The land that you're using at Tunini is taking farmland out of production as it exists today. That doesn't mean you can't have some form of agriculture underneath spray fields. It's just it's different than today. The key mitigation is agricultural easements. And those would be easements that the county would have to purchase over other lands to preserve in perpetuity that land. The result is significant unavoidable. Simply put, we cannot avoid that one. Now, the environmentally superior alternative, drum roll, brrr, bing, okay? Alternative number four, which in sum locates all the facilities at Tunini. It's a little bit longer pipe run to take the untreated raw sewage out there and bring the treated effluent back. So yes, you have a little bit more pipe, but the net effect on other things is less. Now, we're required under CEQA to say what we feel is the environmentally superior alternative. This does not mean, as I'm sure you heard earlier, that this is a conclusive document that's making the final decision. That's not what this is. We're just required to say, from an environmental standpoint, what's the environmentally superior alternative? And we're saying it's number four. Have the next slide. And again, to refresh your memory, it's taking everything out of town, putting all the facilities at Tunini, and and bringing a treated effluent line back into Broderson, same as the others. And here's a list of reasons why this is the environmentally superior alternative. And this discussion is, you'll find it in Chapter 7. So if you want to look and see where is this located, it's at the end of Chapter 7, and you're going to thumb for a long time through that because it's a long one, but that's where it is. And what I've tried to do is walk you through how you use this document, and we've set it in a couple of locations in the document of how you use this, because this is a little bit different animal than some of the others that you may have seen before or commented on before. You also will have the opportunity to look at this. Right now, the draft EIR is on the county's website as a PDF document. You can download any or all, whatever you want, dash EIR net, N-E-T. Now, there will be a link from the county site to this and back, but if you want the document electronically, right now it's on the county site. This other one that I just mentioned is under construction, and we'll be adding to it all the time, more and more information, more and more reports, so stay tuned. More is coming. Now, that wraps up my portion of the presentation. I hope you have a feel now of what the EIR is, kind of what it says, and how to look at it and how to get through it. So I'm going to bring Mark back up for some concluding remarks on, now that you have all this, what do you do with it? Thank you.
Okay, there, just a couple of simple things. We're almost there. EIR comments, I just want to remind you, we are asking for your comments, and believe it or not, CEQA tells us how we're supposed to go about doing that. I put the guidelines section up there just to make it look official. It's important that we focus our comments on impacts to the environment. So as you go through the document, it's okay to comment on other things, but remember, it's an environmental impact report, so we've got to focus in on that. And it's important to explain the basis for our comments when we make them. I should tell you, I end up commenting on other agencies' documents and have to go through this process. We want to put out some facts. We want to put out there what we're really thinking, what the facts are behind it. And if we're making assumptions, CEQA says we have to make reasonable assumptions based on the facts. And if we're experts, and many of you are, it's important that your expert opinion be supported by facts. Interestingly, when CEQA was first written, it didn't say supported by facts. So folks would say, my name is so-and-so, and I'm a professor of this, and I have a doctorate, and you are wrong. That's a little bit hard to fathom. We're asking your comments to be in writing. I believe emails are okay if they're concise and they have a name, so a way that we can record it and respond to you. We take those written comments, we put them in the documents, and then we respond to those specifically in writing. Now, the purpose for that is this is a public information document. So when one person asks a question, it's important for all of us to be able to look at that question and understand it and look at the answer that it goes with it. If you call me on the phone, I'll do my best. Well, what I'll do is say, please write it down. I've been doing that for 6 months now. And that's so that everybody, 3408, is the county mailroom, and they know where I live at the county after 19 years. You can try it. I wouldn't recommend it. I'm going to send a postcard to myself, put my name and the zip code underneath, and see if it makes it to my desk. I think it really will. But all the other stuff looks nice on the envelope if you put that in. Gene talked about copies. We encourage everyone to go through the website. This is the county website. The document's there. And we'll put a link to the fancy website as soon as it's up. Remember, it's the holiday season, so give it a little bit of time, and then there'll be a document you can really work with. We're trying to be green with this, so if we can all stick with the electronic, that's the best. But you can get a copy of the computer disk. I think it's technically a DVD. It's one of the thick ones. There's a table over there. If you leave us your name and address, we'll even mail you one. But if you're going to be in San Luis Obispo during the day, we're in the county building, the old courthouse, the one that looks like a government building. Second floor, there's a front counter, nice ladies there, and they'll hand you a CD. Hopefully those won't become coasters and whatnot, but that's a great way to carry it with you. There is a full copy in the library here in Los Osos. That's the one with all the binders that you saw, if you want to just pull down an appendices. If you're not an electronic type person and you just want to sit down and read it, I think old-fashioned way is not the right term. I think it's got a little more to it if you can touch it. A similar copy, if you're in San Luis Obispo at the City County Library, they have one at the reference desk, and there's one at the front counter in Public Works. Actually, that's the one I brought tonight. So if you like hanging out in the courthouse, you know, between trial dates or whatever you're up to, come on over and read the EIR. I have paper copies of about the 2-inch thick one, the first part, without the appendices. You can check those out. We're asking everybody to do a 2-week loan and keep those rotating. If we get short on copies, we'll certainly get more of those done. I probably shouldn't say this, but the TAC members, because they have to study this and then have a meeting, which you can all come in here, actually each one has a hard copy. So if you have a TAC member down the street, you might, you know, just knock on the door and ask to borrow that thing. It's just the summary version here. And then a lot of people have said, I want my own copy. We're trying to stick with the county's standard process. There's a lady called the environmental coordinator who oversees all things CEQA, and we're following her walk through this. You're certainly free to take a CD. By the way, if you check out a paper copy, there's a CD in the back that has the appendices. You can just come get the CD from us. Take it down to your copy center. I understand if you just say, make me one of these. You may also have to make revisions to the document to address that. The EIR is going now in lockstep with the design build process and the coastal development permit. So as I said earlier, you can look for the EIR, the final EIR, to join with the coastal permit. And as Pavel said, either spring or summer 2009 will finish out this CEQA process. With that, I believe Mr. Gibson, Mr. Ogren have sorted through the question cards, and we'll move right into that process.
So why don't you grab that chair, and then I'll sit here with you. Thanks, Mark, Michael, Gene, everybody. We're sort of scheduled to be here until 9 o'clock, and we're pretty much going to stick to that. I want to quickly introduce a couple of other individuals who have come up real quick. John Waddell, who's handing some cards to Supervisor Gibson, and John is our project engineer. He's really been sort of carrying, you know, a lot of weight on this project, and obviously I'm real appreciative to have him on the team. He's the individual who I, on a day-to-day basis, talk with more than anybody about the total scope of the project. And he was the liaison, the individual who worked mostly with the technical advisory committee over the last year, especially in the review of technical memos. His right is our other John Diodati. John's been with our department a couple years, and he first came from USDA, where he was working on local assistance grant programs. And John has been the lead in pursuing both federal and state grants for the project, and has, you know, developed a number of the documents that have been submitted for grant applications and everything. And we've gotten really good scores on a lot of things for grant applications. But the reality is that the state is waiting for us to get a little bit further along on the process for us to be able to get some of the grants. But even in the limited, you know, the bad situation in the state budget today, there are the grants that are coming out that were previously approved by voters. And we do think that we're going to be very competitive in the next round, since the project right now is at that phase where we really are getting close to being under what they call ready to proceed. But in any case, John and John are going to come up too. Mr. Gibson is going to sort of pose the questions, and then I'm going to probably look to one of the team members in most situations to try to answer it, maybe handle a few myself. And I guess, Bruce, if it's one of these individuals, go ahead and give them the mic, and then if it's Mark or I, or if it's a long one, we might have to have them come up here and speak. But
there aren't going to be any long answers, Pavo. I'm to Rotaries, and Bill Garfinkel points out there are two TAC meetings happening on December 2nd and December 9th, where they'll be considering the EIR. We mentioned the LOCAC study sessions. Mimi has the sign-up sheets if you're interested over there. Again, lots of local organizations. If you want to get in touch with Kiwanis, Rotary, any of those, we'd be the chamber, we'd be happy there. And I'm going to be doing my office hours second and fourth Thursdays starting in January. That's 4 o'clock at Sea Pines, 4 until at least 5 o'clock. So that and all the other ways that we can get outreach going. I'm going to start with a real easy one. Is at what point in the process has the county become the lead agency? And that's a term of technical term about CEQA. That should be a short one.
Well, then I can't answer it, right?
We are the lead. Okay. We got to get on the program here. We are the lead agency right now.
Yeah.
And what that means is that we are responsible for certifying the accuracy and completeness of this EIR. And Mark had put up the flow chart. So we are currently the lead agent.
Yeah. The other aspect of the question, you know, got to be good listeners here. And as a lead agency, we are the lead agency right now under AB 2701. The question specifically also, you know, sort of speaks to the issue is that under AB 2701, there's a provision in there about the county having a due diligence period, which is the period where we're doing evaluations, can we really do this project or not? And it requires the board to adopt a resolution to either say, yes, we are absolutely going to implement the project, or no, we're going to walk away from it. And that resolution has to be adopted prior to the county collecting, imposing any assessments on any property tax bills. So obviously, as we've been moving forward, we wanted, needed good results from Prop 218. We need good participation. We need to continue the progress on the project. But ultimately, they have to adopt that due diligence resolution before collecting any taxes from the community. We'd like to be at that point in 2009. The idea that the soonest that anything will be on property tax bills would be December of 2009, and then it wouldn't be the full amount on that chart. It would ramp up over years, but we have to do it before we collect anything.
Absolutely taken over. But again, in technical terms, for those of you that are technically involved in CEQA, the county is the lead agency in processing the CEQA analysis. There are a number of questions regarding how the four project alternatives were selected. And maybe the easiest
to change them, but we had to make a choice of, okay, STEP is going to be here, and we're going to evaluate Ox Ditch and another one. We're going to do facultative ponds on another one, but they could be interchangeable. So there's nothing sacred about, it says that only in one. Could it be on four? Sure, it could be.
So basically a step collection system has its set of impacts, a gravity has its set of impacts, more or less independent of where the sewage goes.
And just to quickly follow up on the answer to that, a lot of people, the National Water Resource Institute recently published a report. They did the peer review of our project efforts. They came up with six alternatives. Three of them are step alternatives, three of them are gravity collection alternatives. All of them happen to be at the Tanini site. But the six alternatives that NRWI established are also equally viable under the co-equal analysis done by the Brannaman team.
Okay. And again, I apologize if your specific question wasn't asked here, but we're really trying to cluster them up. Which brings me to a question. Was the in-town cluster system type project as proposed by P.O. Lombardi evaluated in the draft EIR? If so, what was the result? And if not, why was it not evaluated?
How about Mr. Hutchinson this time?
Button on. Further to your right. There you go. There you go.
There's a red light. It must be on. The P.O. Lombardo is called the decentralized system. I believe if you look in one of the alternative or the appendices, it briefly addresses that and explains where it stands. The short answer is when we looked at the environmental impacts of multiple treatment plant sites, they were significantly higher in important coastal resources than those of either step or gravity. So it is in the document as a lower level alternative, but it didn't make it as the A level alternatives, again, because of the level of impact. Those are not fully analyzed to the detail of the four alternatives, but they're certainly in the EIR. And it does explain why that was not carried forward. That's the famous Chapter 7, which I particularly enjoyed, as a matter of fact. It's actually quite well written. So you want to look at Chapter 7 to see what's up with decentralized and several other approaches as well, some of the on-lot things, and even the, what was the other one? The regional treatment is discussed in there.
The county EIR of 1987.
I've got that one as well. We'll work backwards. In 1987, the county did an EIR for a project that was gravity collection. It was a treatment plant site on Turi Road down the hill from the old dump. There was a chapter in there called Economic Analysis. It was quite well done. It's important to note that if you find that document and read that chapter, it says about five times in the beginning, this is not part of the CEQA analysis. It actually is a separate topic. Now, economic impacts, well, two things. CEQA is very explicit, and it says social and economic impacts are not significant effects on the environment. That doesn't mean they're entirely left out. CEQA also says, primarily CEQA judges and case law say, if you can trace a chain of cause and effect from an environmental impact to an economic impact, or from an economic impact to an environmental impact, then it's something that's ripe for discussion in an EIR. I think what we really have is the situation here. If you think about chain of cause and effect, you can see project and you can see economic impact. We all know that. but there is no environmental impact link in that chain. We could not identify an environmental impact that causes the economic impact. It's a two-link chain. There's no environmental link there. So that's why there's not a tremendous amount of information about economics in the EIR.
And I just want to interject real quickly because whereas earlier tonight even I had mentioned that, you know, CEQA is a statutory, regulatory-driven document on what has to be in it. And so the economic impact analysis, as Mark was describing, what the guidelines speak to on economic impact. Separately, the county has done economic feasibility analysis. Now, it does not take, you know, very many, you know, touches of that calculator to recognize the economic impacts of the project on this community. And certainly, you know, our desire to mitigate and reduce those economic impacts are one of our primary objectives. The fact that it's not one of the issues that's really addressed in the EIR because of the, you know, the cause and effect type of issue. There's also issues associated with environmental justice, which are in the CEQA world. If you were to propose to put something in a location that is specifically targeted because you're going to, you know, impose it on like a on a the economically disadvantaged, there would be environmental justice issues associated with that. So the CEQA, and this last summer, the State Water Board did approve new guidelines on their program that were specific when we were there, very much conscientious about the impacts to Los Osos. Extended loan periods in order to help bring down the monthly costs, and they have to go through additional steps with a federal EPA to get that approved. But the point is that the feasibility, the economic feasibility analysis has been very important in order to, you know, again, reinforce pursuit of grants and other.
We'll certainly be talking a lot about that in coming months. We'll, if we have time toward the end here, maybe we can come back and visit it. But that certainly be a topic for office hours and many other venues. I'll turn now to a series of cards that really came up talking about the groundwater. The first one, and again, if we can sort of roll through these, specific project objectives first listed groundwater quality. Is groundwater quantity an issue? Is the impact on ground, or the environmental impacts on quantity as well as quality been studied here? Phrase it that way.
Well, short answer is yes.
Okay.
Those are addressed. Water supply and groundwater quality are different chapters in the EIR. Tremendous amount of work has been done to figure out what the impact to the long-term water supply and the seawater intrusion issue is from collecting that effluent, carrying a portion back to Broderson, how much of that is usable, how does that affect seawater intrusion. So yes, there's a great deal of information in the document on quality and supply issues as well.
And Mark, we might want to just carry on that. Various people have noted that if you know the effluent is being treated out of the immediate Los Osos groundwater basin in the number four alternative in the environmentally superior where treatment is done at Tonini, and then the spray fields at Tonini, and there's a concern about you know, we're looking at discharge and disposal of the water outside of the basin. Maybe you could elaborate just briefly on the importance of Broderson and the impacts that the project, the mitigation that the project looks at for the fact that water's headed out of the basin where it was pumped.
Well, yeah, I think it's important. All four alternatives have the exact same effluent disposal scenario. They all have a spray field. They all have Broderson to the same volume initially. They all have that water conservation requirement component of a hookup. Broderson is there because many years of study, different folks have looked at it from every place so that we have that pipeline between the treatment plant and the community. So that as we find future uses and higher levels of treatment of water can be put to even more effective reuse.
Okay. And we have the map up, and maybe we can use Pavo as our Vanna White if we need to talk. Oh, we got a cursor.
I'll move the arrow.
No, let's not go there. And there was another quick one about whether ag exchange or in-lieu use of water has been fully studied in the EIR.
There's a whole number of future options for this treated effluent that ends up out here. Ag exchange is certainly one. One of the goals of the team was to come up with a project that established the widest possible range of options. Folks who've gone through that and done ag exchange programs have talked about more than 5 years of negotiation with farmers and whatnot to do that. One of the interesting things about Broderson is there's some topography there that as we start moving towards discussions with farmers, excuse me, Tanini, what did I say?
He said
Broderson. Oh. It's getting late. Tanini has some topography that some folks on the team have said, you know, farmers don't irrigate every day, but we'll have this treated effluent. If we could negotiate a deal to exchange with them, we can even do a little reservoir or something like that on the hill and provide them with pressure water. It seems to be well located and situated for that. So the idea was create those options.
What, one more quick question on water, if I could, because we got a number of other impacts that folks are interested in. How much conservation is recommended in the IR? To what extent is conservation part of the project here? And how are those impacts discussed?
The number that's identified in the EIR for conservation is a total of 160 acre feet annually from what the current what the discharge would be from the septic or from the residences without conservation. And I don't know the details of that because I haven't looked at it that closely. My understanding, though, is that what you're looking at is based on all the work that's been done by CSD and others of those hooking up to the system all have the low-flow toilets, primarily low-flow toilets, and then the shower heads and whatnot, we can easily get to that 160 number, probably beyond based on what we're seeing already, but 160 seems like a good number.
Bruce, real quickly, though, I want to sort of interject a little bit of what we are doing versus what we are not doing. A lot of individuals here know this, but I just want to, you know, important to provide this clarification, because under Assembly Bill 2701, the county clearly has the authority, the sole authority available there in order to help solve water supply issues too. But our role is to cooperate with the water purveyors in those future additional efforts and to develop a wastewater project that provides the community with the greatest flexibility overall.
And let me move on to one of the questions. We were talking about Tonini there. How can an area zoned for agriculture have an industrial building placed on it? And the other fact about the Tonini site that was of concern is the fact that that's out of town, or one other concern about the Tonini site is it's out of town, and does that mean that we're going to see Los Osos build out to the edge of the to the treatment site? Growth inducement is the short term.
I guess the first question is one of those land use things. You know, is it an industrial use? Is it some other kind of use? That's all contained in the county's local coastal program, which functions as the general plan. The generic term is zoning. So actually, the document doesn't say zoning. It says land use category, but that's a long term for zoning. It's zoned agriculture. A wastewater treatment facility is, I guess the best term, is on the list of allowed uses in the agriculture zone. There's no need to change the land use category from agriculture to something else. If the project gets built there, it may make sense later on in sort of a map cleanup to change the name of it to public facilities, at least for the treatment plant site. So in the county zoning, and this is true in the inland area, also countywide, wastewater facilities and disposal facilities, treatment and all of that is allowed in the agriculture land use category. Growth inducement is an important issue. There's an entire chapter in the EIR that talks about that, or an entire section at least that talks about it. Important considerations, how do we, you know, prevent sprawl if we put a sewer plant? Is everybody going to... Now, the first thing is I hear people say, well, you put a sewer plant and everybody's going to want to build a house right next to it. Not quite sure that's correct. There's a lot of points raised in the document, some more sophisticated than others. It's important to understand that the project in the coastal permit will be sized to serve the prohibition zone. The plant will be there to serve only the prohibition zone. The limits of the zone and the size of the plant will be set in the permit by the Coastal Commission. So the first hurdle if somebody wants to expand is you have to go to the California Coastal Commission through the process that starts at the county and get the permit changed. Now, granted, future generations...
Built to serve the prohibition zone, including the undeveloped lots in the prohibition zone or not?
Yeah, and so there's a little bit of a clarification on Mark. The sizing of the plant would include the undeveloped lots within the prohibition zone. The sizing is based on the prohibition zone. But in the local government committee meetings on AB 2701, the language was changed from our ability to serve not just the wastewater prohibition zone, but any property within the LOCSD district boundaries. But what's interesting there, and this is one of the things that we think is key, and in talking with the staff of the Coastal Commission about how we're proceeding, they are very much concerned about growth inducement. But AB 2701 specifically limits wastewater service to within the boundaries of the district. What that means is that the Local Agency Formation Commission, LAFCO itself, LAFCO typically has the power to allow out-of-district service agreements that a CSD like LOCSD would have to say, hey, we want to provide water service or fire service or some sort of a service outside of our boundaries, and they could be allowed to do that if the Local Agency Formation Commission here in San Luis Obispo County approves it. But because Assembly Bill 2701 is special legislation and it limits the service area, that means our local LAFCO does not have that type of an authority, and that does help significantly mitigate growth inducement types of issues. The other things that we think that will help mitigate growth inducement on the project itself is, as was mentioned, in the acquisition of Williamson Act property and the ag properties in order to build, we have to buy then ag easements over other properties, you know, preserve certain properties forever for agricultural purposes. That's one of the, you know, conditions that we expect is going to be set. And so, the question becomes is then what type of properties do we want to target for those ag easements? And one of the nice things that's happened over the last 10 years or so is there's been a lot of green belt that's been built, you know, has been acquired around Los Osos. So obviously then looking at properties that are in agricultural production that would kind of help fill in that green belt would be very beneficial, because then that would limit the ability of any future annexations to the CSD. The other thing that would help in ag easements to address growth inducement factors would be also to buy those ag easements along the pipeline route, because if on the pipeline route there's ag easements, then you can't have connections to it at that point in time. So the strategies of moving forward on where to buy ag easements, what property owners might be interested in selling.
Proposed spray site. Should I invest in a raincoat? How far is the fallout? I like that. I mean, the question is basically some of the most directly unpleasant effects of treating sewage, odor, and how do spray fields work? Nobody wants to touch this.
Regarding the odor issue, in terms of the pond system that is being proposed in projects 1 and 4. The odors result from changes of season.
I'll put that up just a little closer.
From the changes of seasons. The changes of seasons bring the winds, and the winds cause the turning over of the liquid within the ponds. And as they turn over, they are bringing the odor out of the ponds. Now, because of, again, this isn't a case of stagnant air. It is a case of the winds. And once the odors come up, they are brought and dissipate along with the wind. So basically, there are other points that could have odorous effects. However, the project has included various odor controls at those specific areas in order to substantially reduce that amount of odor that could be produced.
So the mitigation of an impact. Let me move on to...
spray fields, though?
Spray fields, and just two? Basically what kinds of impacts do we expect of the spray fields themselves?
The spray will be fully contained within the site. There's very specific language in the EIR that says what kind of heads are used and how far they spray, and that they won't be leaving the site. So, no, raincoats aren't needed for that reason.
And the other question that was actually asked to me before we started here was, how long does the material stay on the surface? You spray it on the surface,
what happens to it after that?
Well, that's a function of the evapotranspiration, because typically you don't have bare dirt. Usually you have some kind of a fodder crop underneath it that is harvested. It's like grass. And there may be some that sits on the surface of the plant for a while. Most of it just evaporates, especially if it's sunny. If it's not
ponds into the design of the project, is that it really has an opportunity to create aesthetic improvements to the overall site itself. So if you're driving up Turry Road, we're going to have opportunities here to design some features into the project that will be aesthetically nice.
And I think one, I just noticed one question that was sitting here, you know, how does project number four control saltwater intrusion? We're talking about spray fields at Tonini, and I think it was listed as spray fields at Tonini, but all of that includes also return of flow to Brodersen for disposal, about a third of the effluent disposed at Brodersen as well. I'm sorry. My budget.
Sorry. All four alternatives have the use of Brodersen for a leach field, and all four have spray fields at Tonini. So there's no difference between any of them.
Thank you, Gene. And then, so a couple questions about chemicals here. One specific in terms of treatment options. Will it handle, is it honophenol or nonophenol? Nonophenol, which is identified as a significant chemical pollutant. There are a number of other constituents in sewage that I think are becoming increasingly of concern. And the question is, did the DEIR look at those impacts, as well as the impact of chemicals that are actually used in the treatment process?
Well, the second one is a lot easier to answer. Chemicals used in the treatment process, part of it is naturally occurring bugs, and they're in you right now. That's why it works. It's the natural biologic process. There are chemicals that are used for disinfection. It could be sodium hypochlorite or something like that, where you chlorinate to disinfect. The first question about the long list of chemicals, I don't know the answer to that. And I know that some of it is addressed, but I think that if there's a specific question, that's exactly why a question should come in to have that addressed as part of the review of the EIR. Because some of the trace elements, you'll see a headline, everybody goes, oh my gosh, what about this? Well, maybe it's an impact, maybe it's not. I personally don't know. I'm not an expert in those kinds of chemicals. But I think if the legitimate question is there, ask
the board that we have to meet. One of the topics in, you know, really throughout the country is pharmaceuticals. That the increased presence of pharmaceuticals and wastewater supplies and how they can impact the natural environment. You know, we've read the studies about organisms that are, you know, changing sexes or having multiple sexes because of pharmaceuticals and everything, and it is an increasing concern. But one of the things we also have to recognize on this particular project especially is a couple of things. One is there is no proposal for surface water discharges. And so a lot of wastewater treatment plants throughout the country are the treated effluent is going into rivers or it's going into the ocean or it's going into large lakes. And that's simply not proposed at all in this project and really hasn't been historically proposed, I think, in many of the options for quite some time. I'm not sure about the earlier efforts of whether or not surface, but that's not the case here. But we always have to recognize, whether it's drinking water or it's wastewater, that over time, the regulations have increased and have become more strict. We just recently upgraded the Lopez Water Treatment Plant, which takes lake water from Lopez Lake and basically, you know, makes it drinking water and then delivers it to the Five Cities area. We had a 40-year-old plant we just recently upgraded. And the key with Los Osos is that we've been really talking to the regulatory agencies that we need to develop a project based on today's regulations. That if we add all of the bells and whistles associated with what if they change and what about this and what if this, then we're going to be increasing costs on a project that's already extremely expensive for the community. Let's work with the regulatory environment that exists today, and then if down the road in 10, 20, or 30 years, there's a different requirements, we have the space, you know, on the Tinini site to be able to do upgrades in the future, but phase in those improvements over time to minimize cost impacts on the community today.
Just let me check with the organizers here as we head up toward 9 o'clock. We did get started a little late, and if folks are interested in staying, I'm certainly comfortable going a little after 9 o'clock. How much wrap up at the end did you want? Five minutes?
Yeah.
Let's try. Why don't we target, keep going on questions till we get to about nine, and then we'll do a 5 minute wrap up. A number of questions as to how we came to declare one of these projects the environmentally superior alternative. In particular, this question asks, why was gravity shown to be superior to STEP in the final choice?
No project at all. And we didn't have that situation because of the regional board's orders. When I looked at that, the thing that struck me, and you'll see that in Chapter 7, is that the difference between those four alternatives is not substantial. There are some very slight and subtle differences. One of the key things is greenhouse gas. The project that provides the greatest benefit, and notice I said not least impact, but greatest benefit, so we're already over that zero threshold, turns out to be a gravity with the facultative ponds. The other end of the scale, and that's something like 40% less than the current greenhouse gas impact of wastewater treatment, which again, of itself, is a very small part of the community's overall footprint. So very subtle changes can make big changes there. So alternative four, something like 40% betterment of where we are now with greenhouse gas. Alternative one, which is the STEP collection with the same treatment, 15% better, still better. So that's a very subtle difference. On the cultural resource side, there's a very subtle consideration about flexibility when you're installing the system in the ground. When you're trying to do a step tank and you're on a lot, your flexibility is somewhat reduced. Now, gravity system has a pipeline that goes onto the lot, so you can see not a great difference. So when you look at the environmentally superior alternative and look at the reasoning behind it, you can quickly see that it's superior, but not by magnitudes of any... there's a question about what about laying of pipe. There are numbers in the document. It turns out that the total amount of excavation between gravity and STEP is very close.
So, and we'll, again, and so we'll get to those details off in the due course of time. Pablo, did you want to add anything?
Yeah, just to reinforce the Mark's statement about subtle differences here. Remember earlier what they mentioned is that there's only one Class 1 impact of the project, and that's on agricultural resources. That means that when you look at the different technologies and everything, they don't have Class 1 impacts. I mean, the subtle differences are really pretty subtle. The idea that, you know, septic tanks produce methane. Methane has a bigger impact on greenhouse gases than carbon dioxide, which is typically the byproduct of a centralized treatment plant. Yeah, those things kind of weigh in on the determination of an environmentally superior alternative.
I'll take a stab at that. And answer would be no. You know, there's typical, the allowance for the water from a person is about 65 gallons per day per person. And, you know, the solids would be in a few cups. So, you know, in certain communities where, say, it's a vacation community and you're having very low flows because homes are empty, there can be problems. But in a community like Los Osos, which is you know, largely occupied every day, that I don't see that there would be any type of limitation on conservation due to flow requirements.
Okay. A number of questions here. Why purchase 640 acres or over 600 acres of Tinini for a sewer treatment plant that was once going to be put on 13 acres? What other facilities? Possibly a sludge treatment facility? Why so much land purchased at Tinini?
Simple answer. It's one parcel of land. But the more
more complex answer really comes, again, all four alternatives that were reviewed have the same effluent disposal, and that requires a minimum of 175 acres. So you could not take the old 14-acre Midtown site and say, okay, we're going to do spray effluent here. You can't, it's not big enough. It just won't take it. So that's why the larger parcel of land. And if you start dividing land up, you get into some issues of, are you severing unmarketable parcels and all these other things? Just
up to your lips on the swallowing.
Oh, all right. Did you hear me back there? You did. Okay. All right. The biggest reason is just need a lot of land in which to do the spray fields.
Why could you do it on 13 before?
Okay. And so we'll move. Let me see if we can jump through some of these. If the county will use any federal funds, how will you address NEPA, which is the National Environmental Policy Act?
There's actually, three angles right now where NEPA, those of you who are familiar with that, federal agency involvement. One of them, the State Revolving Fund, has its roots in federal money. That's administered by the state through an agreement with the Federal Environmental Protection Agency. They accomplish NEPA through an invention called CEQA Plus. So you do a CEQA document and you add a few subtleties to it, CEQA Plus. There might be an additional document that needed to be put out, but it would be very similar, actually a subset of what we've already done. And the third source that we're looking at that I've been tracking is through HUD grants, Housing and Urban Development, which is federal funds. There's a very narrow window that we can get some money there that would require a small NEPA document, but we're familiar with those in my office and have produced them for other projects around the county in needy communities. So we've got three angles going right now. Two are fully covered, and the third is fairly easily accomplished. So we're well positioned to take advantage of federal funds and meet the federal NEPA requirements that come along with it.
Quick one on cost. How far out was your life cycle assessment? What was the extent of the life cycle assessment?
20, 30 years? Yeah, the key there is we were originally working with 20-year financing. The life cycle cost assessment is also something that we're updating right now. But the important thing there is that we tie it pretty much to the length of the debt that would be issued for the project. Once you really get out beyond 20 and 30 years and you start doing projections of what's it going to cost and what are those variables going to be that far back out in the future, you're really working with a big world of speculation. If we just back up 30 years and put ourselves, you know, in the 1970s, how well are we going to project economic, you know, factors and everything that exists today? So the fact is life cycle cost analysis is important. Having it coincide with the issue of debt is very important. But really, when you start getting out too far, I've heard people say we need to do life cycle cost analysis over 50 years. And my response is when you get out 50 years, you're really working with a lot of speculation out at that point in time. Okay. So,
thanks. There are a number of other questions about costs and fundings and grants and things that I know are of considerable, in fact, primary interest to a lot of folks. We don't have time, really, to get into those, but over the course of the next months as we get toward more project decisions, you can be assured that we're going to be available to talk to you about those in any length that you'd care to. Again, I'm going to just emphasize the outreach. I'm going to turn it back to you with one suggestion of a topic to talk about first. But again, presentations to the LOCSD, to service organizations in town after the first of the year, LOCAX, CEPAVO, or the team for wrap-up. A number of other questions here about the community survey, who it's going to survey, when it's going to happen, what's the consequence of it. So you might want to talk a little about that.
Very good, and we will wrap up here. On the community survey itself, it will be in your mailboxes in January, probably looking for about a two-week turnaround. Surveys are most effective if you get it and you read through the materials and you sort of don't put it on the shelf. If you put it on the shelf, then, you know, sooner or later those response times are passed and it doesn't get turned in. So we do have typically a pretty short window on the community survey itself. Was there a another part of the community survey question. Oh, who is going to be surveyed? Basically, it's everybody. And what we're going to be doing is we're going to be everybody who lives in, near, or, you know, right around Los Osos. The idea that when we get the responses, we want to be able to break it down demographically. What are the responses that we're getting from individuals who are within the Prohibition Zone? What about the individuals who are outside of the Prohibition Zone but still within the district? What about the people who are just living outside of town? Because especially if, you know, we're going to be looking at a treatment plant site that's outside of town, then, you know, their concerns or opinions are important too. Property owners and people who aren't property owners, you know, the residents who don't own property. So essentially making sure to canvass the entire community so that the results could be understood based on the different demographic groups. Oh, one of the questions, and again, we're going to have to, you know, I got to wrap it up with this last question, but it's really, it's a good question, because one of the ideas or one of the concerns that's been expressed about the process is that we're going to have a community survey before we get done with the design build process and before we know what the contractors are willing to make firm contractual commitments on. And so, boy, you know, is that something that's an insurmountable type of a challenge? And the answer is it's really not insurmountable, that in the community survey itself, when we come to cost issues, and one of the big ones is on the collection system, that is this gravity system, is the step alternative, which one's going to be less expensive, and because the step system itself, you would continue to have a septic tank on your property, and you'd have to have a new septic tank installed on your property, there's going to be property owner impacts associated with it. What does the community build processes? They have been challenged all over the United States, even on a low bid where we're just asking, you know, contractors to do a low bid on a typical bid-build type of a project. Those selections are challenged in the courts. And when we get into a design build process, we have to have all of the criteria established up front. We can't go into a design build process and say, hey, give us your best and final offers, make your contractual commitment, then we're going to survey the community, see what they think, and come back with tell you who you're going to get as a selection. Simply isn't going to work under the public contracts code because it's going to be too subjective. We have to be able to evaluate the community survey before we get into the selection criteria on the successful design build contractors, and we know that price sensitivity can be addressed in the community survey. Obviously, in the coming months, we're going to have a lot more items to talk about. And again, I want to thank, you know, Supervisor Gibson, our other officials who showed up, and everybody who stayed, the entire EIR team. And as we move forward, I guess the one thing that I just really sort of want to request of everybody is the concept of constructive criticism. We know this is a draft environmental impact report. We know we're going to get a lot of comments on it. There's going to be a lot of comments in addressing those. But we really, really have to focus in order to move the community forward in getting the comments and in being constructive in that, that we really want you to be constructive in your criticism of what we're doing. Certainly, one of the big challenges that a number of individuals are going to face is that they're just their basic belief system. We've come out with a draft EIR, and it's going to challenge some of the preconceived ideas that individuals might have. Just take your time, study through it. If you think that, you know, there's points to be critical about what we've put in there, let's just be constructive in it so that as the months that proceed into decision-making happen, it's good community dialogue and leads to good community decision-making. And with that, I just want to thank everybody again for showing up, and we'll be back out here often. Thanks.